Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the special post-match edition of the Four Seasons Fire American Soccer Show. The United States taking on Guatemala at MAPFRE Stadium in Columbus. And I will say this, it was a dominating performance. It was a much-needed performance. And the United States can secure the full 3 points with a 4-0 thrashing over Guatemala. Joining me for a short period of time, of course, Kartik Krishnar from World Soccer Talk. And, of course, Earl Reed joining me. And Kartik, if I go to you first here, what did you make of this 4-0, let's be honest, it was a destruction of Guatemala by the United States, and does it make up for what happened Friday night at Estadio Mateo Flores?
No, it doesn't. Look, I mean, the United States has had several low water marks in terms of results against CONCACAF opposition in the last year and a half, or in the last year. Whether we talk about performances against Haiti and Honduras, which were wins in the Gold Cup, but where the United States was arguably outplayed by Honduras, I think certainly outplayed by Haiti, and then outplayed twice by Panama, and the loss to Jamaica, and then the CONCACAF a playoff game against Mexico, which was mismanaged by Jurgen Klinsmann, and then the result against Guatemala, and somehow, you know, getting a 0-0 against Trinidad was a great victory for us, you know, and I was on this show after that match. It was a great result. You know, we had the ambition and the courage in 1989, Paul Caligiuri's shot heard around the world, to go to Port of Spain and win against the Trinidad and Tobago team on the cusp of making a World Cup. Now, if we go there and we get a draw against Stephen Hart's team, it's a great victory. And it was actually, in this run of results under Jurgen Klinsmann, the United States in this cycle, it was a very good result, getting a 0-0 in Port of Spain. I'll take that result in Jacksonville next month, or in the final set of qualifiers against Trinidad. So, no, it doesn't do anything other than to say, once again, when the United States plays the likes of El Salvador or Guatemala or, you know, your smaller Caribbean nations, Cuba, those sorts of countries at home, the United States gets these sorts of results, especially if their back is against the wall. Now, will the United States get this sort of result if their back is against the wall and they have to play Costa Rica or Panama or, lo and behold, Mexico in a similar spot in the half? I don't think so. Not with this current regime, not with this current vibe around the program. And, look, I think the referendum on Jurgen Klinsmann is commencing now. If the United States beats Colombia, advances to the Olympic tournament, check the box, we've made progress under this technical director with a really good generation of players, young players. If we don't, and we miss the Olympic tournament for the second straight time, it'll be the first time we've missed two consecutive Olympics that we haven't boycotted since the 1960s, I think time's up for Jurgen Klinsmann, in my opinion. I think this match is as important for him when it's about to start.
Well, that's the one thing, isn't it, Earl? I mean, as we already know, the under-23 second leg of the playoffs for the Olympics will be starting very soon. It's down in Frisco, Texas, between the USA and Colombia. I mean, let's be honest, everything is evolving around Jurgen Klinsmann right now. And for the United States to try to advance to Rio, you know, after a very solid performance tonight in Columbus, but still, questions are still hovering around Klinsmann. Does he stay? Does he go? I mean, you know, let's see what happens. But still, though, Earl, how do you feel about this performance? And do you think Klinsmann has dodged a bullet?
I mean, he probably – I'm not sure what kind of bullet he actually dodged. I'm not sure – I mean, he's under fire from – the supporters. I don't know how much fire he's under from those above him in the organization. I think, you know, this is a match the U.S. should dominate, and they did. The question becomes, for me, why is it that it takes this groundswell of disenchantment with Klinsmann for him to put out a squad, an 11 that actually makes some sense. Instead, it seems like he'll get a result, and then all of a sudden it becomes the I'm going to play tinkerer manager. I'm going to show everybody how smart I am, and then the team falls flat on its face. And, you know, I think a part of that could simply be from the confidence of the players not really being, not only comfortable with the positions that they're in, but also comfortable with what decisions he's making. When you start doing that, you start to lose, lose the training room, so to speak. So, you know, for Klinsmann, he really needs to sort of settle this down. He needs to start making good decisions every game, not putting out these experimental lineups that, moving Yedlin up to, a right midfielder, right winger, moving Jeff Cameron over into a position he hasn't played much recently. Just like he did in this match, he put players out into positions. He brought in Beckerman, who, helped to thwart a lot of the counterattacks that they were getting burned with in Guatemala City. So I think, this is a performance you should expect from the U.S., and I would think you need to expect it in the next round. You need to see, will you get it? I don't know, but I don't think the dissension is going to go away anytime soon. And it's just unfortunate that it takes the cacophony to get him to actually do something right or proper for a change.
Yeah, absolutely agree with you guys there. I'll be honest with you. This had to be a better performance than what they showed on Friday night. I didn't think they had any, I wouldn't say confidence. I would just say a very lackluster performance to start that match. I mean, they had plenty of time in the second half to at least get a goal or two if they could, which, of course, Paulo Mota found ways to stop the U.S. from getting anything on frame or at least to prevent them from converting a chance or two. But they had to find a way to get back onto the positive end of a result and a performance that they had tonight. Now, obviously, it's only one positive performance. They have to prove over and over again that they're going to have to do this against both St. Vincent Grenadines on the road and back in Jacksonville for the final semifinal group game against Trinidad and Tobago, because I'll be honest with you right now, Kardik, I don't feel confident with Klinsmann against St. Vincent Grenadines on the road down to the Caribbean, because if we remember the last cycle they were qualifying for Brazil, they had to take on Antigua and Barbuda, and both home and road games were terrible.
Yeah, right. The home leg of that Antigua series was in Tampa, and it was a struggle. I remember Eddie Johnson, I think, ended up getting a goal late to make the U.S. To ensure the U.S. victory. And then the leg in Antigua was very poor also, and we're very fortunate. That St. Vincent game shouldn't be difficult, but maybe it proves to be more difficult. Trinidad beat them 6-0 tonight. But
yes.
The U.S. doesn't want to go into that last game against Trinidad, which is going to be in Jacksonville at the football stadium, at the Everbank, the Jacksonville Jaguars stadium. So it won't be full. It's not Mexico, it's Trinidad. You don't want to go into that qualifier needing something. They have the possibility of, if the U.S. can get 3 points against St. Vincent, of taking a draw on Jacksonville in that game and advancing to the hex. If you need to win that game against Trinidad, it's going to be a big problem. Trinidad is just about there. They've got 10 points now. So, I don't have a whole lot of confidence in that. I do want to comment on what Earl said. I think he's absolutely right. Playing guys in position. So Jeff Cameron is back at center back today. This season for Stoke City, he's played either center back or holding midfield. He has not played right back all season for Mark Hughes' Stoke team. Yet he played right back in the qualifier the other night. Why was he playing right back? Why did the United States have to play Jeff Cameron at right back? Because Jurgen Klinsmann made the decision to play DeAndre Yedlin in a wide right midfield position in a kind of hybrid diamond formation, which also required Yedlin to cut inside more than he would as a pure right-sided wing player. So then your one natural right back on the roster is playing in a right midfield position. You take a center back, move him out to right back, and then you put another center back in Michael Orozco, who can kind of be a right back. And a place you could have played Cameron was at holding midfield. Since you don't have Cameron available and for some reason decided not to play Kyle Beckerman, he plays Nick Diskerud, who I have described time and again as, to me, the worst player in the U.S. player pool who consistently gets caps. He's one of the worst players that the United States has had over the course of the last two decades that has gotten this many looks for this long a period of time.
Yeah, I agree with you there, Carter.
I think Diskerud is terrible. His soccer IQ is very low. So this is a guy you don't put in an unnatural position because his soccer IQ is very low. Now, he's a good technical player. He's good on the ball at times. Just rated by his peers in MLS, the most overrated player in the league, which I agree with. I see the utility in Diskerud as a late-game sub who has good technical ability in attacking areas. You don't play him in that role where he was played on Friday night because, again, you need some soccer brains to be able to play that position, and he doesn't have it. He just simply is a – he and Breck Shea are the two least soccer IQ, the two dumbest players in terms of – I'm not saying dumb intelligence-wise like book smart, but in terms of this sport, they're the two guys who are consistently out of position and make mistakes in their positioning and where they play balls and those sorts of things in this player pool. One guy who isn't like that anymore is Jayasi Zardes, and one thing I will compliment Klinsmann for is bringing Zardes along, sticking with him because he's turning into a really good player and a useful type, spunky player on the international level that you can plug into a couple different places in different formations. So I will give Klinsmann credit for Zardes because I had Zardes in the Diskerud Brett Shea column about a year and a half ago, and now I certainly have him in a different column, of players I'm really beginning to like.
So what you're saying is that Mix Diskerud has tapioca pudding for brains.
Yes. I made that comment in press boxes when he's been playing for NYCFC or the U.S. national team. So it's not like I'm saying it for the first time here. I just do not like him as a player and cannot understand why Klinsmann continues to call him in. But to Klinsmann's credit, Diskerud didn't play tonight. So and you had Beckerman in the team, and Beckerman played very well and settled the midfield down. Now, can you imagine if Kyle Beckerman had played in the last game, or if he'd called Perry Kitchen in, or somebody who plays that position naturally, or played Cameron there instead of playing him at right back and played Yedlin in the right position? Maybe we wouldn't have been in this situation today.
Yeah, probably that's correct. Earl, I'm going to get you first, and then Carter can quickly answer because I know you have to get going. What did you think about Christian Pulisic now getting his first cap for the U.S. national team, and how did you think he looked? First Earl, and then Kardec.
Well, I think he looked fairly competent out there, but I mean, it's going to take some time for him to, gain size and just, be. I don't know how much time he's getting at Dortmund, but getting another young player into the pool here is a good thing, and that's something that I think Klinsmann needs to continue to do. We're seeing a lot of veteran players in this cycle right now, which worries me to an extent. But at least he's bringing him in for the last, several minutes as opposed to starting him like he did Julian Green in the World Cup or bringing him in an extremely important – I mean, this is an important match, but the U.S. already had things salted away for the most part.
Yeah, go ahead, Kardec.
Anyway,
to answer Earl's question, actually, there are no other Americans in our player pool currently that can play for Borussia Dortmund. Christian Pulisic plays for them. He's played in four Bundesliga matches since the winter break ended. He started one of the matches.
Okay.
He has looked pretty good for them. I mean, when he came on in the game against Hertha Berlin and they brought Ramos on at the same time, that opened up channels for Aubameyang and Mkhitaryan in that game. And Dortmund are one of the best teams in Europe right now. They're only 5 points behind Bayern Munich, who we consider one of the top two teams in the world in the Bundesliga. So, he might be 17, but I don't know. Young players hit walls, and you have to manage their minutes, you have to manage their games. But he's playing for a team that no other American would get into right now. I mean, I don't even think who would we say our best players? Michael Bradley, Clint Dempsey. These guys wouldn't get close to the. They wouldn't make the bench at Borussia Dortmund. There's no way Michael Bradley would play for Borussia Dortmund. So, yeah, I think it was a natural for Klinsmann. I'm glad he did it. I mean, I was worried he wasn't going to call him in, and he was going to send him to the U20s or U23s. But, yeah, this is a good player. This is a player that's been ranked by publications in Europe one of the top 50 young players in the world. We haven't had an American on that list in a long time, well, since Freddie Adu. But this guy's already done more than Adu, at least at the European level. And, yeah, I thought he looked good. I thought he looked comfortable. And I know Ian Dark and Taylor Twelman were talking about him. Maybe he'd be intimidated. But again, this is a guy who's played important minutes in important games for Borussia Dortmund as they're trying to chase down Bayern Munich in the Bundesliga. I don't think he's going to be intimidated by Guatemala and Columbus. I'm just sorry that he won't be. He might be intimidated when he plays Mexico and Columbus, but not Guatemala. So
no.
Hats off to Klinsmann, actually, on this one, because Pulisic is a guy I thought maybe was I mean, we're all tracking him, and those of us who watch European football like Earl and I do and know he's been playing for Dortmund, I thought maybe this is one that was off the radar of a lot of the U.S. people. But Klinsmann, I realized he wasn't when I got a release from Borussia Dortmund right before the international break, basically saying Pulisic had been called in by the U.S. but was ill, so he wasn't going to report, so he wasn't there for the first Guatemala game, but he's recovered now. So Klinsmann had the intention of calling him in for both these games. So I guess that's something we need to give Klinsmann credit for. He realized, even though he's 17, if there's an American playing for Borussia Dortmund, he's got to be in your 23s. Probably should be in your 11, quite honestly.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Clark, I know I got to let you go. We do have the under 23 second leg on my TV.
Yeah, your TV.
So go ahead, and thanks for coming in for 15 minutes. We'll talk to you next time.
Thank you.
All right, that's Carter Kirschneier once again talking about this World Cup qualifier. And let me just say this, Earl, just to cap off about Pulisic. I want to give Borussia Dortmund a lot of congratulations for allowing an American to get the opportunity to play for their great club. Ooh, there's a shot that just went over the crossbar by Colombia, and it was completely missed. So the United States still 0-0. In this first half at Frisco. But, you know, you got to give credit to Borussia Dortmund giving Pulisic an opportunity. Like, I agree with Kardik. I mean, I don't think any American would ever get an opportunity to play for these top clubs in the Bundesliga. I mean, you know how technically sound the Bundesliga is, like La Liga is. Serie A is very defensive and everything, but still, I give Dortmund a lot of credit for allowing an American to get this opportunity. And, you know, he's taken the opportunity as well. I mean, it's great to see a kid who gets an opportunity and he's not letting it go.
Right. And, I mean, I don't know how much all the players that have sort of, you know, withdrawn from Europe, so to speak, have had an impact on how Americans are viewed over there. But, I mean, it's pretty clear that there aren't nearly as many, you know, Americans going across the pond to play. I mean, Yedlin's over there, and there are definitely a few others. But, you know, and I guess he grew up in Hershey, Pennsylvania, which isn't terrible. I'll be driving through there this weekend. So
you're gonna get a box of chocolates.
I really won't be stopping there in Hershey, but yeah, it's no, I mean, it definitely good for Dortmund it'd be nice to see more Americans trying to make a go of it. You know, I think that's a big part of it is you have to take the chance of failure and the more Americans that are willing to try and potentially fail, some will succeed, and it looks like so far, Pulisic has, been making way there for a pretty young guy, 17-year-old. So, I mean, it looks like a good find, and it's nice that he didn't, jump ship for his father's homeland, Croatia.
Yeah, absolutely, and it should be very interesting to see.
Yeah, I was going to say, it looks like Colombia has sort of been taking it to the U.S. so far. The U.S. has been sort of hemmed in for the most part in this game here, but in this U23 game tonight. But
yeah, absolutely. No, absolutely. I mean, right now, Colombia, I mean, let's be honest, Colombia has so many talented players in their
yes.
pipeline for these youth national teams. And not to say that I don't believe the USA does not have talented players, but the question really is how much of a level are our players on compared to what goes on in South America? I mean, let's be honest, South America, it's like night and day. Our guys, I believe there are some talented players, but depends on where their level is. And we see Kellen Acosta, who is on this under-23 playoff roster for tonight over in Frisco at his hometown stadium. And where FC Dallas plays, so we'll see what happens. But still, though, we have to say right now, for the senior side, for the men's side, this was a performance that they had to have. This was a performance that they really needed to conjure up and try to find a way to just knock Guatemala down. And I think it was a mistake by the head coach of Guatemala, of Walter Claveri Alvarado, that he had both Marco Papa and Carlos Ruiz on the bench to start this match. I think that if they were both starting, this could have been a lot more hairier against the United States. What do you think?
Well, yeah, and I mean, that was something that I remarked on Twitter, not in the same words, but that, you know, when you start with an attack like that, you know, in my mind, if I'm the coach, I think that my team has to get the USA behind early, and then the pressure will mount. You know, obviously, the United States players have been under a lot of pressure. You know, I'm sure they felt it when they were down in Guatemala. And, you know, as players feel that, you know, especially with a home crowd. I mean, sure, the home crowd will root you on some, but when you know, everybody knows how, you know, the supporters have felt about Klinsmann and how the team performed in you know, down in Central America on Friday, they would have fallen behind 1-0, you know, in those first 10 to 15 minutes. You know, it could have gotten pretty ugly real quick, especially if then, let's say, Dempsey misses his chance. You know, let's say he hits it straight at Mota, and like he did in Guatemala, and U.S. doesn't score there, and it gets 1-0, and it ends up being a little later in the game. Then you get more and more of this tension, and, you know, and that's when you see players, you know, it's not easy to play under that kind of pressure. So for Guatemala to start out without playing Ruiz or let's say, Papa, I think they – oh, boy, what a save.
Yep,
I saw that.
That's a big save there from the under-23 American keeper, as that was destined for our post. No, that's fine. That's fine. Earl. Yeah. I saw the same thing. I tried to keep quiet, but I'm glad you did it.
Yeah, but I agree with you that it may not have been the wisest move to leave them on the bench. And, you know, by the time they were brought in at halftime, it was already, you know, 2-0 and then soon to be 3-0. And the game was all but over at that point. You know, U.S. is, I would say that they're relatively proficient at being able to hold lead once, especially a 3-0 lead.
Mm-hmm.
Against a team like Guatemala, that I wouldn't, you know, as much as, you know, Ruiz can be a pest and can score a timely goal, you know, he's starting to get up there in age. I'm not sure he's going to be the guy who scores a hat trick or, you know, leads you back through, you know, some kind of Herculean effort. Instead, he's going to be a guy who might get you on the break. And the U.S., had at that point more or less sat back a bit, and the break, you know, being caught out on the break was not really going to happen against them. So,
no,
you know, it really, the tactics, I think, were, you know, just a little off, like you said, actually a lot off, and it really made the game, I think, easier for the U.S., especially once they got that first goal. It just settled them down, and, you know, it actually turned the tide. It turned Guatemala into this sort of, you know, nervous, you know, I mean, we had talked all weekend probably about, you know, and I'm sure they talked about it in Guatemala about this team, you know, possibly making it through to the hex, the U.S. being in trouble, yada, yada. And so then the pressure is all on them to perform. And
yep.
They didn't. Huh. So anyway.
No, absolutely. You are correct. Let me say this. Usually the U.S. is in a 4-4-2. In the start of this match, the U.S. was in a 4-3-3. I've never seen the U.S. outside of a 4-4-2 formation ever. And I think going with a 4-3-3, it seemed to reinvigorate them. It seemed to look like they were able to actually put more pressure on Guatemala than they were in the past. And I would think then, if you want to go 4-3-3 then on Friday night, maybe that would have, you know, stopped all these these terrible possession moments where they keep losing it.
Right. Well, and I think part of the problem is you don't have Kyle Beckerman there on Friday night, or a player of his ilk, which really it provides support for. I mean, that, say what you want. I mean, you have a guy in Steve Birnbaum who he hasn't started a meaningful match for the men's national team yet. So you have him and Cameron. I mean, this is basically a new center back pairing. To have a guy like Beckerman there who is going to, you know, really run interference for them and make sure that, you really have three guys in the center of that sort of a diamond, we'll say, or a triangle between the two center backs and the holding midfielder, just fending things off. And if, Beckerman would have their back if they had to advance it just provided more support, as opposed to, you know, you then had Michael Orozco and Omar Gonzalez, who started in Guatemala on Friday night, who, you know, they've played together in the past, I'm sure, but they're still, they didn't have that kind of support. And, you know, in having Michael Bradley and Mick Diskerud, you know, you just don't have the type of player who is just going to always be there. And I'm not even sure Bradley and Diskerud have a whole lot of comfort playing the central midfield together. You know, it's just, these are the types of things that when, you know, you're Jurgen Klinsmann and you're trying to pick a side and, you know, you're creating these new pairings and new partnerships and, you know, how do they gel? I mean, if it doesn't work out, then, I mean, you're talking about qualifying, and it really puts you in a pinch. And you know, Friday night they were in a pinch, and tonight they at least got themselves to a situation where they can maybe see the daylight and see the ability to sneak through into the hex after being in a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, that's very true. And I think the one thing that's going to be big for them in September, and right now you can't really worry too much now about Copa America Centenario that's going to be coming this June. That'll be obviously much better, a full-strength squad that'll be ready to go and everything like that. But still, though, the real games are going to be in September. The real games are going to be against a minnow like St. Vincent Grenadine. You know, they're 0-4. They have four losses. They lose to Guatemala. They lose to Trinidad and Tobago twice. And they already lost to the United States to open up their qualifying campaign in the semifinal round. I think they're already eliminated. All they're going to do is play for pride in September. But the sad thing is that for the, you know, for the United States, they got to go back to the Caribbean and take them on in that cricket stadium, and they have to find a way, the United States, to just play with the same passion and the same the same tempo and the same feeling of your back is against the wall, because you don't want to give this team an opportunity to steal 2 points away from you or the full three.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. And I think, some of this will be on, Jurgen Klinsmann picking an 11 that, you know, gives each player the confidence to, attack their position in a way that is fitting of, you know, what he needs, you know, what you need to do in order to pull this off. It's, you know, and you have to hope players like Jozy Altidore come back to full health and remain healthy through the Copa America and whatnot. I mean, I think having him would be, you know, maybe having him for the full match in Guatemala may have been helpful instead of having to rely on Bobby Wood, who, you know, while he is a future, who, you know, could be a future star for the men's national team, I think he's still, you know, feeling his way through, you know, through the team and trying to get himself, you know, build the chemistry with the other players up there. You know, you could say the same thing for Zardes. I mean, he is definitely getting better, but, you know, having a player like Jozy, you know, Altidore, he's, you know, he's scored, you know, at plenty of different levels. That would be very helpful to them, I think, in order to be able to get a point or get 3 points at St. Vincent and Grenadines, and, you know, which might make the game against Trinidad and Tobago that follows, you know, at least something where all you have to do is pick up a point. You know, obviously getting 3 points would be great as well, but getting into the hex is the, you know, that's what it's about. And, you know, whether you win the group, whether you finish second, as long as you're getting to the hex, then, you know, you have a little bit of time to sort that out and figure out how things are going to go forward, you know, into what's a pretty grueling, you know, 10-match schedule there. So,
yeah, absolutely, and that's going to be the one thing that you're going to have to see some of these players start. I mean, I don't want to say manning up, but at least improving in some form of way when you start the hexagonal, if you qualify for it for this coming November. So we'll see what happens then. Let's just give everyone some updates on World Cup qualifying. Currently, if you want to go to Group A, Honduras and El Salvador is at halftime right now, and it's 0-0. Panama and Haiti are 0-0 in the 28th minute. Costa Rica and Jamaica, they'll start later tonight, as well as Canada on the road down in Mexico. I mean, that's going to be a big, big matchup for the Canadians after they get shellacked at BC Place over in Vancouver. So if Canada can find a way to sneak a point out of the Azteca, I mean, that's going to be a huge thing for them, and hopefully we'll see what happens. As, World Cup qualifying, we'll see who's going to fill out these spots for the Hex. I mean, I would have to say right now, I think St. Vincent Grenadines, like I've said already, they're going to get eliminated. I think for Canada tonight, if you want to look at the, you know, with Honduras and El Salvador in their group, if that's a draw for both teams, Canada gets saved because there are still 4 points up. So they'll still have at least a one-point lead over, I believe, Honduras. And I have to take a look at the all three groups in CONCACAF to see what's going on here. But still, though, once again, Earl, the situation is really simple for the United States. They finally got a big victory. It was over at MAPFRE Stadium in Columbus. And right now they leapfrog Guatemala to regain second position. As we all know, top two spots in each semifinal group will advance to the hexagonal, and it should be interesting to see what is going to happen here. And once again, Earl, it's just a situation for the United States where they had no choice. They had to play, you know, lights out, and they had to go out there and do it. And here's confirmation. We have 10 points for Trinidad and Tobago. They top Group C. The United States regains group second position with 7 points with the 4-0 win. Guatemala goes back to third with 6 points. And for St. Vincent, it's already over. They're eliminated. There's no way they're going to go up at least to the second position. So they can play spoiler if they can.
Yeah. I mean, and let's see who. So their last game would be against Guatemala, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That would be, I mean, either Guatemala or U.S., I guess, would be where they'd be the spoiler. You know, might be, you know, I guess I'm trying to collect my thoughts here.
Mm.
You have to think the U.S. goes in there and takes care of business. You know, you'd really, you know, it's tough to see. I mean, this team is, you know, has a minus 16 goal differential. I mean, for them to be I mean, they could sneak a point out of it, I guess, but and that would be a disaster for. Oh.
Yep, and a disaster just happened. Colombia just scored. They have the away goal, or shall I say, at least a goal to level the away goals rule to make it 1-1. But on aggregate, it is 2-1 Colombia. And as of right now, the United States needs an equalizer of their own to at least force extra time. So at the moment, Colombia is ahead 1-0 in the second leg. They're up on aggregate 2-1. The United States needs at least one to force extra time. They need two to at least go to Rio. So at the moment, it's still in the first half, and we'll see what the United States can do. They've been on the back foot most of this half, and hopefully the United States under-23s will find a way to get back into this, and we'll see what happens. But that's a great goal from Colombia, and they're up 1-0 in this playoff in the second leg. So we'll see what happens as this match continues on. But once again, for the senior side, they're up 4-0 with a victory against Guatemala at MAPFRE Stadium. Just to review the goals, I thought the Clint Dempsey goal to open the scoring was absolutely brilliant, Earl, because you saw a great ball being delivered to Jossi Zardes. He was trying to split the defenders, and I don't think he meant to put it on the back of his head to Dempsey, but it was in perfect position for Dempsey to trail the play and score it.
Well, I mean, it was tough to tell whether it came off his head or off the defender's head. But, you know, he took on two defenders, and, you know, the ball sort of squirted out there, and, you know, credit to Dempsey, he was running onto it. You know, we saw cool and collected Dempsey on that finish, as opposed to Dempsey, who, I mean, he still put it relatively close to the keeper, but it was definitely far enough away to be able to sneak by him. So, and he hit it with some pace. You know, it was a good take. And, you know, he basically was making me eat some of my words from the other night where I had him done and dusted as far as a national team player. I think, you know, he might have fed off the crowd some. He fed off the fact that he got this first goal. And I thought he looked, as the match went on, he looked even more active, you know, and was definitely involved in at least one of the other goals in this match going forward. But, yeah, it was a nice finish for him. I believe the long through was from Jeff Cameron, you know, the lofted ball to Zardes. And just in general, I kept thinking in this match, it's amazing that the U.S. didn't have any better luck against these defenders down in Guatemala, because they just didn't look like they were up to the task at all in this one. And, you know, I don't know how they fended so much better down there, but they certainly did. And I don't know. Maybe it's just you had players like Zardes more involved, because he was obviously one guy who really, I think, caused some problems for the defense. And you saw that in a couple different situations, the first goal being, you know, our first glimpse of that.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you know what else I liked? I liked seeing Michael Bradley move up a little bit more in the midfield instead of playing so deep. I know there were times he went back and played a deep position. I understand that he had to go back a little bit more than normal. But the truth of the matter is this, is that when you have Kyle Beckerman, you know, when you have Kyle Beckerman playing that destroyer role, it makes it easier for Bradley to be more creative. And I think that's the one thing that people keep forgetting. I understand that his father put him in a defensive midfield position, but Michael Bradley is an offensive player as well. He has the ability to play in an offensive position, in an offensive role, and he can go out and he can score some goals whenever he's ready to go. But the point is this, he needs to be up top a little bit more, if not up top, at least close to being behind the strikers. And I thought he was put in a perfect position tonight, being behind the strikers. Obviously, Zuzi on the right, Bradley on the left, Beckerman in the middle, and I just felt that's where Michael Bradley should be playing. I know he likes to play deep in the midfield, but I feel that Bradley has more offensive capabilities than people lead on to believe.
Well, and I guess what I would remark is I think he was able to play a more withdrawn role than he was, maybe a year ago now. I mean, I think Klinsmann tried to have him play as more of an attacking midfielder as opposed to, I think in this particular setup, he was a bit more of a box-to-box guy. I mean, he was still directing some of the play, but it wasn't necessarily, like he was trying to thread passes and do something like that that he wasn't comfortable with. We saw a lot of lofted balls from the back line up and over. We saw, I think Zuzi played a little more forward than Bradley did, which allowed Bradley to sort of sit between him and Beckerman and, just be a little more freer and not be as, feel like he's tied to either, running the play from up front or just being a dedicated defensive midfielder. And maybe even have those roles confused like I think he was on Friday with Diskerud, where, maybe the chemistry wasn't so good and they didn't do so well in, being able to, whether it's switch off which role or who's doing which role or, is one guy dedicated to being in one position or the other. And as Kardik said, with Diskerud, you may have a guy who isn't, quite as savvy at being able to play in other tactical positions. And so if you're asking him to do something, as soon as he doesn't perform that well, then you might have a guy like Michael Bradley saying, well, I'm going to have to default to doing this for him, which then throws off the entire formation to an extent and, sort of causes a dilemma where, things are a little out of balance. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree. I think Bradley was much more comfortable tonight in the role that he had. And, Klinsmann really needs to pay attention to that, figure out how he can keep that. If it's not Beckerman, who the next guy is who can be in that role. Kardik mentioned Perry Kitchen, but, a guy mm-hmm. who can sort of free up, Michael Bradley to be, to be a box-to-box as opposed to a defense, but also not force him into some kind of a purely offensive playmaking role that just doesn't quite suit him particularly perfectly either.
Oh, I agree with that. I mean, I don't think he's a pure playmaker, but at least he can bring up the ball and at least he can set up some killer passes. He can just spring the strikers on an attacking run. I mean, I just feel like
I think there was a period of time where Klinsmann tried to sort of shoehorn him into more of an advanced playmaking role, and I just don't think that was right for him either.
Right.
I think he offers a lot more elsewhere, and I don't think he's comfortable in that role. I think you're playing him out of position, and so I think what he was doing tonight was very suited for him. What would you call it? Maybe a number eight kind of role,
mm-hmm.
as opposed
mm-hmm.
to a number 10,
right?
Or the number six is what they you might call the defensive midfielder. He was sort of shuttling the ball up and being able to do a number of different things, which he's a versatile guy. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you there. And, it's just one of those things where, I'm saying, look, I agree with you. He's not a pure playmaking player. He's not a creative attacking midfielder. I mean, he can attack, but I feel like, he's just – at times he's just way too deep, and I like to see him push up a little bit more. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying he's got to, create here and create there, but I like to see him at least push up more than being so deep with the back line. But speaking about his, abilities to create chances and to create goals, the free kick he had against Guatemala for the second goal of the match, I mean, Jeff Cameron, right place at the right time. He timed his run beautifully, Jeff Cameron, and he scores that second goal that looked so beautiful in the 36th minute. And, of course, give credit to Bobby Wood, who put it in that, you know, he put Bradley in that position to at least create that free kick chance.
Yeah, I mean, Wood was attacking the right back for the, you know, much of this game. So, yeah, being able to set that up, then Bradley, you know, delivered a nice free kick after we had just listened to Ian Dark and Taylor Twellman go on and on about how Klinsmann had put Graham Zusi in the side for set piece delivery, and then Michael Brad, you know, Zusi's first set piece delivery was quite underwhelming, and then the next one was from Bradley, which was right on the money. Jeff Cameron gets position on the defender. Another case where you just wonder how the U.S. didn't fare better on set pieces against Guatemala the last time. But, you know, he gets in position, tons of power on the header. Mota had no chance, and that put him up 2-0 just past the half-hour mark. And, you know, that was, you know, the textbook American goal, I would say.
yeah.
You know, you get a lot of comments on Twitter about that with, you know, the whole set piece, you know, everybody, people think that that's an unsophisticated way to play. I think in CONCACAF, you really have to take advantage of that because, especially against the minnows and, you know, Guatemala isn't quite a minnow, but, you know, they're definitely a team that's going to play defensively. You know, set pieces are important. You've got to win them, and you've got to be able to make them count. And tonight the U.S. did down in Central America. They did. So, you know, great work all around on that one.
Absolutely. And if you want to throw this at the conversation, Guatemala is always like a mid-table team because you never know what you're going to get from them. And at the same time, they play so tough against you. I mean, they throw everything at you, including the kitchen sink. And they try to find a way to frustrate you, to trick you, and everything. And sometimes it's a shame they got to play like that because I think there are some talented players. I mean, obviously Carlos Ruiz is not at the level where he once was. I mean, he can still convert, but the point is he's not at the level he once was. And when you're wondering what's going on with the pipeline down in Guatemala, I mean, they do have popular and talented players, but for some reason they just can't seem to get it together.
Yeah, well, none of us are as talented as we once were or whatever. So,
what are you saying?
I don't know. Maybe I just don't have the same energy I once had. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, every nation has to deal with you know, the same issues that the United States does. You know, being able to replace your top players. You know, not everybody stays young forever, and you know. Soon enough, Michael Bradley will be, you know, aging out. I mean, Clint Dempsey is already, you know, one of those guys that I'm not sure you can rely on him every match to be the guy who can score a goal or two. So it's how you regenerate your program. And you know, Guatemala is, you know, keeps trying to have a go at it with, I mean, my wife was watching the game and she's like, man, some of those players look really old. I'm like, yeah, that's sometimes you have to do that. And,
yep.
You know, some might say, you know, you look at Dempsey. I mean, he's got, you know, he's not exactly, you know, the, you know, young, dark haired dude he used to be. I mean, he's starting to look a little on the grizzly side. And in the same breath, I would say both Dempsey and Ruiz are savvy, you know, kind of gritty players that will bring you their own edge. And, you know, that's one thing you'll say about Ruiz is he knows how to mix it up with, you know, central defense, how to maybe even take a cheap shot or two and maybe even goad a defender into doing something really stupid, which could, you know, play to their advantage. So, you know, those are the types of things that, you know, don't always make you a fan favorite, especially when it comes to the opponent. But,
yeah.
You know, it can help you. And I think, you know, you see Dempsey, you know, he has a bit of that, you know, spunk in him as well. So, anyway, yeah, I don't know what the talent crop looks like for Guatemala that's coming up through now that Ruiz is getting, you know, sort of long in the tooth is what they,
yep.
the euphemism. But
yes,
I guess we'll find out soon enough, and we'll see if they can hang in there as they try to turn things over.
Absolutely. And of course, that third goal, I mean, that came out of nowhere, honestly. I didn't know they're going to score a third goal that quickly to start the second half. And then here comes Graham Zuzzi out of nowhere. The ball was loose. I know Dempsey was going after it, but Zuzzi finds a way to just tag it past Mota inside the far post. And 3-0 USA in the 46th minute. And it was just absolutely breathtaking to see the United States not only converting a chance that early, like right at the start of the match, but that's the first time in a World Cup qualifier ever since they've been going to Columbus that the United States have scored more than just two goals. Of course, we all know the Dos a Zeros against Mexico. We all know about, you know, they've scored, I think they beat Jamaica 1-0 in last qualifying cycle in the semis over when it was known as Crew Stadium. This is the first time I've seen the United States score more than two goals in a World Cup qualifier in Columbus.
Yeah, well, and it was another case where, you know, Zardes had a ball. I mean, he's just what I would say, you know, mixing it up a bit with the defense, and he doesn't really get a very quality touch on the ball, but he gets a touch on it, and it kind of caroms off of him, like you said, right to Zuzzi. Nice. Actually, both him and Dempsey were right in the area.
Yep.
So, you know, that's you know, you need a fortunate bounce every once in a while. The Lord knows they didn't get it the other night in Guatemala. It seemed like their, you know, all of their chances were for naught down there. So, you know, falls right to Zuzzi. He throttles it home, and like you said, it's, I mean, I was actually rooting for another goal from either team just so that we wouldn't have to hear, you know, sort of that same tired meme over and over again about the Dos a Zero. But I got my wish.
There you go. You see, it all worked out in the end.
It did it for me.
Earl. It did it for you.
Yeah.
Just to give everyone an update, it's halftime in Frisco. It's 1-0 Colombia in the second leg. It is 2-1 Colombia on aggregate, but on away goals, it's leveled at one apiece. So the United States still needs that second goal to force extra time. They need a third goal to at least win the match outright. So we'll see what happens there. But once again, Earl, back to this one. You know, Josie's goal obviously didn't mean anything. It's 4-0. It's just, you know, to put the final nail in the coffin for Guatemala. And once again, the United States, they leapfrog back into second place. They have 7 points out of four matches. The next two will be in September. Obviously, they'll be on the road at St. Vincent Grenadines, and they'll be heading over to Jacksonville, Florida, at Everbank Field, the home of the NFL's Jaguars, as the USA will have their final World Cup qualifying match in Jacksonville, Florida, which is great to see. And then hopefully we'll see how the schedule will come out, and we'll see who the top six sides will be to survive and move on to the hexagonal, and who the United States will face. Obviously, it looks like it's going to be Mexico out of Group A. We'll have to wait and see who will be out of Group B. If we can take a look at the standings right now, Group A, once again, Mexico with 9 points. They're 3-0 right now. They're going to be hosting Canada tonight later on. Canada has 4 points, and it's in second place. El Salvador is in third place with 2 points, and Honduras is in last place with a point. So for Canada, if we are going to root for our friends in the northern part of the northern border, north of the northern border, I should say, you're hoping for a draw between El Salvador and Honduras, and maybe Canada gets that opportunity to get back to the hacks since the 1998 qualifying for France.
Right. Well, but then, I mean, then they'd have to take care of some business in September, as we've talked about before, against El Salvador and Honduras. You know, we'll see what they, you know, what they can do against Mexico tonight. It'd be nice if they could sneak out a point, but you'd really think that if they had a chance to get a result, it would have been at home on Friday night, and instead they laid an egg up up north of the border. So, you know, but I mean, they still have time, and like you said, if you know, if you get a draw in the other match tonight, that at least sort of buys them you know, more time in second place heading into the September matches, where they might be able to you know, if they can get a victory, you know, you know, I would say especially against Honduras would be the, although, you know, Honduras of late hasn't been nearly the power that we've seen. So, you know, I don't know. We'll have to see what happens, but, you know, it looks like it could be working out for them if they just, you know, can keep after it and sort of, you know, get the results like we talked about, you know, tonight in the other game. That would be nice for them to be able to just sort of be in the driver's seat, so to speak, and just if they can, you know, control their own destiny and take care of business, then move on. And I mean, that would be, I think that would be a nice, you know, if you, both the U.S. and Canada get through, have them, you know, have a couple of rivalry matches against, you know, USA, Canada, and actually have them mean something for a change, which, you know, a lot of times they don't mean much when we go up against, our northern neighbors. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. But, you know, I don't foresee that kind of result tonight at the Estadio Azteca for Canada. But, you know, you never know. I mean, that's why you go out there and you try. And, you know, the U.S. was able to get a result there when it counted a couple of years ago. So, you just got to keep hoping and keep trying.
Yeah, absolutely. There. Let's give some scores right now. In South America at the moment in the 81st minute, it's Paraguay 2, Brazil 0. So that's a big, big win if Paraguay can hold on to this result here, 2-0. Back to CONCACAF, it's 1-0 Honduras in the 57th minute. And Costa Rica has a 1-0 lead on Jamaica down at the National Stadium in Costa Rica. It's in the 23rd minute currently, but as of right now, for Honduras, they lead 1-0 on El Salvador. And just to take a look quickly at the standings, if Honduras gets at least this three, if they hold on for 3 points, at least they jump up to third, because they would be even, I would think, on differential with a minus. Well, yeah, they'd be even on, with a minus two, as Canada is currently on minus two. And, of course, Canada, once again, has to go down to the Estadio Azteca to try to find any way to get a point if possible. Costa Rica right now in first place in Group B, and they are leading, once again, Jamaica 1-0. Panama and Haiti right now, they're at the half, 0-0, and Brazil just pulled one back. So Brazil has a result. And Earl, as we're about to close up shop here, some final thoughts on the United States and their 4-0 victory over Guatemala at Columbus.
Well, I think the big storyline continues to be Jurgen Klinsmann. You know, the pressure, I would say, continues to mount. I don't know if this will relieve any of it. You know, the U.S. needs to finish this out here come September, and obviously you'll have, you know, the Copa America Centenario in the middle there, just how they, you know, show themselves both, you know, this summer. You know, if they can get to the Olympics as well, that would be another thing. But, you know, there's still a lot of questions to be answered, and people still are not real happy with what the U.S. has put together here in the last calendar year.
Very true, but hopefully they'll find a way to fix it all thing up, and who knows? We'll see what happens. But Earl, thank you very much, and I will talk to you next time, my friend. Take care now.
Yes, thank you.
All right, that's Earl Reed, everyone. Thank you for listening to tonight's special edition, the Four Seasons Fire American Soccer Show, as we review the USA versus Guatemala in World Cup qualifying postgame. For Earl Reed and Carter Krishnayer, my name is Daniel Feuerstein, and thank you very much for listening tonight. Thank you, and talk to you next week. Bye-bye for now.